Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm now joined by Alex Stewart.
Hi, Joe.
And Seb Stafford-Bloor.
Hello, Joe.
We are recording the podcast in the immediate aftermath of the 0-0 result of a football game between England and Scotland. And we'll be talking a little bit about that today. And also we'll be talking about the other two games of the day, which have gone out of my mind momentarily, but also were Sweden and Slovakia and the Czech Republic, Croatia. Only 3 goals today. 1 goal a game, but not spread out like that.
Yeah. It's been a slog of a day.
I was excited about the evening game and I felt quite tired, needed a real boost of energy for this show, and it's just gone.
I felt like the late game was, the prospect of the late game was sustaining me through what was some fairly uninspiring football earlier. And now I feel like I do after a North London derby when all of the energy has gone and I just feel a little bit sick.
Yeah. For people listening to the podcast, hopefully you can't hear it, but there is a party going on downstairs with our office neighbours. They sound like they're having a lovely time, but you might hear some of those jubilant sounds, and I hope that will contrast well with the misery and despair that we're feeling here in the studio. But if you like misery and despair, you should download... No, that's a joke. If you like the opposite of misery and despair, if you like to be informed and to be upbeat and happy, you should download The Athletic. And you can do that at the moment. Get a 30-day free trial to try out how happy it makes you by visiting theathletic.com/TIFO. I expect that there'll be lots of analysis of this evening's events on The Athletic tomorrow, Seb.
I imagine there will be, and it probably won't be that kind. Wasn't great, was it? There's also, we'll get into it, but there's quite a few areas which are pretty easy to attack in terms of how England play, but also the strategy around their performance, which underwhelmed me.
Mm-hmm. And pretty impressive Scotland.
Hey, really impressive Scotland. We're going to try our very best not to fall into that trap of making everything about England, because Scotland was super good tonight.
I also think JJ, as we've said a couple of times, he was too negative about their first performance against the Czech Republic, who we have learned now are a good team, and Croatia aren't as good as we thought they were. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, we caught JJ at the wrong time, because I think in the disappointment of what happened against the Czech Republic, perhaps it's completely natural. You have a sort of a deflating feeling and you overlook some of the things that went well. And as we saw tonight with the Czech Republic's performance against Croatia, decent side. And for a while in that game, Scotland were the better team.
Yeah.
So I don't think we should be underestimating Scotland.
No. Okay. Well, we won't be underestimating Scotland after I leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of Seb Stafford-Bloor and Alex Stewart. Okay, beginning with England 0, Scotland 0. First thing to say, Seb, is England weren't that good, were they? I don't want to take away from a stoic performance from the Scottish team, and we will come on to talk about that But as an Anglophone, I want to talk about England first and how I feel a little dejected.
Rightly so, because I think the word I would use to describe that was fearful, because we spoke last night with JJ about the kind of the perils, the pitfalls of this kind of game for England, which is that it's kind of a no-win situation. And you can easily, as a player, I imagine, find yourself picturing the worst case scenario, which is defeat at Wembley to Scotland, which would be a pretty horrendous prospect. And it felt to me as if, and this kind of showed in the way England passed the ball, the speed with which they did things, and certain moments within their defending, it felt as if they were kind of teetering on the edge of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. They were, focused on worst case scenarios. And I don't know, I mean, we're going to get to the other half of this, which is the Scotland bit, but never did England play with any real conviction, any sense of like, player for player, they're superior, clearly. And yet there was never really a period during the game, apart from a few sort of flashes from Foden and a couple of moments from Grealish at the end, where it seemed as if England actually believed in that superiority. And it was really disappointing. It's just because Croatia created not a, you know, a feel-good factor, but in an encouraging moment, it was a good, solid start to the tournament. And let's not lose sight of the fact that England are probably through as a result of this point. But there was no authority to any of this. There was no conviction. There was no, in fact, there was no security. I thought Scotland looked like the likelier team to score, actually.
Also, the performance makes me, perhaps this is the wrong way to do it, but looks retrospectively back at that Croatia game slightly differently, because aside from Foden hitting the post, the only goal came from the only real chance. And that in that game felt like a sort of cool and calm performance, and they did what they needed to do. Now, after this performance, I look back and think like, where are the goals coming from?
Well, I would say JJ warned us about this. He spoke last night, and people can go back and find this. He talked about how England were quite conservative, don't take many risks. They are the team basically that I've just described. I think tonight was a slightly lesser version of what he was imagining, but he pretty much nailed it. This is a team that worries more perhaps about losing the game than they do about exerting kind of their attacking elements on an opposition. And this was that game, and it was ugly.
Alex, the other thing I noticed about the game was that for England, at least, they didn't appear to have a midfield almost at all. And I mean that by there was no English player progressing the ball through the midfield. People rarely ever stood in the centre circle. And particularly when Scotland had the ball in their midfield, there was a huge gap where they could run forwards to the defensive line. It seemed odd to me, and fearful, as Seb said, but also that bit just kind of confused.
Yeah, so England started off for like the first 10 minutes pressing Scotland really effectively, quite high up the pitch and through central midfield as well. There was Sterling winning the ball off McTominay. And it felt very much like at that point in time, England had identified Scotland's weakness of playing out from the back. They were going to swamp them in midfield, press them high, and control that part of the pitch. And then it stopped. And England progressively sat deeper and deeper. Calvin Phillips, who got so much acclaim, rightly so, for his performance against Croatia, which was very dynamic and much further up the pitch than what we're used to seeing from Calvin Phillips, regressed positionally and in terms of his performance, to play much more of a kind of double pivot role alongside Declan Rice. And they afforded a fair degree of protection, but Scotland had made what I felt was a sensible change by moving Scott McTominay back to right-sided centre-back and bringing in Billy Gilmour, who won the Star of the Match award, I see from Twitter, and kept possession ticking over and moved the ball around. And rather than England get confrontational to that, and maybe it's because there were so many fouls given away in the first 10, 15 minutes by both teams that England backed off that central area a bit.
Yeah.
But they ceded control of that part of the pitch to Scotland and started trying to progress it either long. I think, you know, one of their best opportunities came from that glorious long pass from Jordan Pickford, or entirely down the sides, or, well, I say down the sides, down the left-hand side, really, and just gave up on passing it through the middle. And that makes no sense when one of their strongest attributes is Kane's ability to drop off centrally and bring runners in. If Kane's not going to drop off centrally, or if he is, you're not going to try and find him through the middle. What's the point?
I mean, they gave up trying to pass it through the middle, but they also, at times, seemed to give up standing anywhere near the middle.
Yeah, well, this
felt like they had this weird, like, umbrella-shaped thing. Yeah. Where, you know, there were players moving into the forward wide areas, clustering around Kane in the middle, and they, you know, yeah, like an umbrella, with the goalkeeper being the handle at the bottom.
It felt like they were trying to play almost like the away side would play in a game.
Mm.
So keep a compact six shape at the back, push the fullbacks higher when you're in possession, but don't put them too aggressively against Scotland's wingbacks when you're not. And then try and hit Foden running through or Sterling running through. And the latter of those was rarely going. I mean, Sterling lost the ball more than any other player on the pitch, like eight times, I think. It just seemed like an incredibly cagey performance. And one of the things that, you know, England needed two things at halftime, I would have said. They needed to up the pace of everything that they were doing. So the switches of play needed to be quicker. The passing needed to be quicker. But they also needed more control. And there was a very brief spell at the beginning of the second half where England started to pass it around a little bit more. Again, encouraging like the first 10 minutes of the first half. And then they just stopped doing it. Yeah. And I was like, I don't understand why England start doing something that's working and then just stop. I mean, again, credit to Scotland. They harried, they pressed. John McGinn was excellent in that role as well. Che Adams and Lyndon Dykes dropping off and pressing much the way that Che Adams does for Southampton. But at the same time, you would hope, if you're an England fan, that England would look at the better quality they have on the ball and think, well, we can play through this. We can use Scotland's press against them by manipulating them out of position, playing through the lines, getting our quick runners going. Didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind when you say that. The first is that within the first, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes of the game, John Stones had that completely free header, mm-hmm. which unfortunately hit the post. It looked like he was up a little bit too early and perhaps not expecting to be in such space. But also the other thing, you know, towards the other end of the game, Foden coming off, Seb. I just, at the time, I was a little bit surprised. I wasn't certain it was going to be Sterling that came off. And again, I don't want to massively enter into a conversation about the pros and cons of Raheem Sterling. Yep. Clearly, he was the match winner the other day. Gareth Southgate obviously sees something in him which offers England balance and an alternative, and that's fine. But Foden, before that, Alex even said when we were watching, seemed to be the only England player that looked likely to create anything. I mean, Harry Kane, fewer than, what, six touches in the box?
Yeah, so I looked at Kane's touches at halftime, and he'd had six fewer than every other player on the pitch, including both goalkeepers, which was quite descriptive. The Foden thing, to me, it was as simple as Foden was the one England player who didn't look inhibited by what was happening around him. He wanted the ball, he wanted to run at defenders. Every time he got it, we were watching, there was five or six of us gather around the TV. Every time he got the ball, we were engaged in it. You thought, yeah, something's going to happen here. To me, this describes a fairly, I don't want to say it's a weakness of Southgate's, but it's a tendency whereby he's a little bit afraid to overload his teams with attacking options, in the sense that to almost all of us, the logical change there is Grealish for Sterling. To me, Southgate thinks it's too aggressive. Don't like it. Because as we said right at the beginning, it feels as if the focus is on what could then go wrong rather than, this is a game to go and win. You've got these incredibly, I mean, England's strength is at the attacking, is at the top, yeah, of the pitch. And he has huge strength in depth. So many options. All of these players offer something slightly different. And by removing someone like Foden, you're taking something unique off the pitch. You're taking something that Scotland didn't deal with very well.
Alex mentioned already that Pickford pass, you know, the incredible pass out from the back. And who was running onto that? It was Sterling, of course. And at the time, you know, he runs into the defence, he has to turn around, he loses the ball. That's a common criticism of his game in those sorts of moments. And I think it was said at the time, that's where you worry with Sterling. My other confusion about that is, you know, I think the natural instinct is to think about Sterling as someone who, sure, he can find himself in the right place in the right time in the box. That's one of his skills. But also as a player who has the pace to run in behind, right?
Yeah.
It was Foden doing that in the game.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why you would take Grealish, you would bring Grealish on for Foden. Grealish isn't the player who's going to run in behind. So you're just taking penetration off the pitch.
Yeah.
And the only instance where that, I'm angry.
But I think this is very fair, because to me, one of the great failing of the English media, British media, is that they have this sort of boom-bust situation with Raheem Sterling. So he's either brilliant or he's awful. In reality, I don't think this game suited him. I think Scotland defended ever so well. They were brilliant. The things that Sterling needs to do, think about what he is at City. He is someone that knifes on to chances inside the box. He is, I suppose, compare him to someone in one of Pep Guardiola's old teams. He is what Pedro used to be at Barcelona.
Yeah.
Like, he's that component player that you use to finish stuff, not to create stuff, not to create moves, but to finish them. I'm not saying he can't.
To be the second run in, too.
To be the second run in, to be about movement, to be about anticipation, intelligent runs. That is Raheem Sterling's game, as it was against Croatia.
Yeah.
Good finish, nice sort of run through the heart of the defense, but also being in the right place at the right time.
Composed at the right moment.
Exactly. Anticipation and smart. And this didn't suit him because England weren't creating those kind of chances. They didn't occupy the area in front of the penalty box. They didn't really get to the byline very often. They had a few moments, mainly in the first half, in the first sort of 25 minutes. England weren't playing a game that was designed to benefit or for Raheem Sterling to profit from. And that was a problem. And I feel like, not that he was set up to fail, because that's kind of accusatory. That's not right. That's not what I mean. But it never seemed like it was working for him. I hope he doesn't get hammered for it. No. My fear, whenever Raheem Sterling doesn't have the best game, or if he has a sort of 6 or 7,
it's not his fault that we didn't win the game.
No, but this is the thing. Like, you feel like it's just because of what's happened before with him in previous summers, or previous tournaments.
It makes it an awkward conversation.
He's such an easy target because people are so quick to criticize him. It's not his fault. He just, it's not the right game for him. It's it goes that way sometimes. And you know, manager picks players, and a manager picks players for situations. And tonight, I think that was a failing of the coach.
Well, can we extend to say that it felt at times like it wasn't the right game for Harry Kane either, or at least he wasn't on the right game?
No, I'm a little bit baffled because a couple of people said, and a few people have said in the chat actually, that he didn't look fit, and I completely agree. I've seen Harry Kane come back from injury at Tottenham many times, and it always looks the same. He looks kind of awkward and, you know, he runs in that slightly jerky way, and it just doesn't look quite right. And this evening, he never really looked like scoring, but also he wasn't even receiving the ball. So we can have the conversation about whether he should drop deep or whether he should charge into the penalty box and aim for the penalty spot. I think the problem is a little bit more elementary than that. He wasn't receiving the ball. That's much worse, because then he's not doing anything. He's not scoring goals. He's not a playmaker. He's not having any influence at all. And he looked like a jaded player when he came off.
Yeah,
And it's
it's also felt like something you just wouldn't see in the 2018 World Cup, right?
Yeah, I think so. He doesn't look sharp.
It's interesting that he is very much subbable in this tournament. He's as evidenced by both games now, right?
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I'm completely speculating. There's been a lot of noise around Harry Kane. He's played a lot of football. Tottenham's entire season was based on his performances because they had pretty much nothing else apart from Son Heung-min. There's a lot of noise about where he may play his football next season. He's been in the headlines week after week after week. I wonder if it's just been draining.
Maybe, yeah. Alex, can we carry on talking about the substitutions that were made? Because it felt, you know, towards the end of the game as well, we could see Rashford warming up to come on. I think we were all a little, not necessarily surprised to see Harry Kane off, but surprised to see him be the player that Rashford was subbed for. When that happened, I thought maybe Dominic Calvert-Lewin will follow in 5 minutes, and that didn't happen. It seemed a strange sort of top line to end the game with. The line you would expect if you were looking for that quick counter, or if you thought there were opportunities and space in behind. And obviously the moment that Rashford came on to the pitch, Scotland only had a few minutes left, sat very deep. And there was no opportunity to go in behind at all. There were only flitterings and flutterings around the outside of the area. Grealish on the ball a lot, looking for that cross in. Where's Harry Kane? He's on the bench. No one in there to pass to.
Well, there was a lot of those last 10 minutes were a lot of quite stagnant play at the edge of Scotland's box. There were a number of instances where Grealish got the ball in quite an aggressive position, and you were kind of waiting for someone to arrive, and then, you know, Luke Shaw pops up as the centre forward, and then Calvin Phillips pops up as the centre forward, and you think, you know, what's Rashford good at? He's good at coming off the left-hand side and stretching the game by running in behind. Particularly given that Scotland's weakest player, I think even Scots fans would probably agree, is O'Donnell on the right wing back position.
Who had one of the best chances of the game.
Who did, yeah. And forced a fantastic save from Pickford. So, you know, that's the space that you target if you want to have a player running in behind. And like, yeah, as far as Sterling goes, he does bring a pressing game, for example, that Grealish doesn't. And his astuteness of when to press and when not to press, I thought that was good, that was effective. But at the same time, if you know that you're going to be dealing with a fairly compact defence, which would look a lot like a five and then a three at times, also even with Che Adams and Lyndon Dykes dropping back and helping out with that press, you don't want somebody whose sole function as an attacking player is to try and stop the opposition playing out. And it felt like you said, once England sort of slightly went for stretching the game, they then didn't have a focal point to make any of that count. And I don't know, you also have a fullback change. So, you know, Reece James and Luke Shaw come in for this game, provided significantly more threat than any other English players in terms of their passing. But I think Reece James only had one really good first time cross, and that was the one that Kane headed fairly narrowly wide from. And if you bring on someone like Reece James in for a game like that, you release him down that flank. You get him whipping in first time balls. But the way that James was checking and playing the ball back inside when there were crossing opportunities on says one of two things. It either says there aren't enough targets in the box, which is a failure of the rest of the team to get forwards, or he's been instructed to play the ball back in field to try and work it through the half space, which seems like a waste of having him on the team. So
yeah,
a lot of it didn't make sense to me.
Let me ask you a question about Southgate now, after the game, right?
Right.
Because obviously in some ways you'll think he'll watch that performance, he'll be slightly worried about going into the next game, going into the round of 16, you would hope. Another way of looking at it is that I've got a point, they're on 4 points. There was at least one, possibly two opportunities in the game where you wouldn't have been surprised to see them score a goal. The John Stones header was one of them. Mm. I think Foden had a good shot early on too. That is, if they scored that goal, the game changes, right? It was very early on. Scotland have to play slightly differently. Not to say that they sat and defended deeply throughout the game, because they absolutely didn't, but the game state changes when that occurs.
Yeah.
And suddenly we might be looking back at this and thinking that's the same as the Croatia performance. And actually maybe there's a positivity there, and there's, you know, there were opportunities for them to win the game. They just didn't take their chances this time. Will Gareth Southgate be in that mindset, do you think? Or will he be very disappointed with what he's seen? There is a middle ground to those two things,
yeah,
as well.
I mean, obviously we've got no idea because we're not in Gareth.
Sure.
I suspect.
If you were Gareth Southgate.
If you were Gareth Southgate.
If I were the England
manager, or if I were literally Gareth Southgate?
No, I was about to say if you were Gareth Southgate, but Gareth Southgate without being able to make little comments before you answered questions.
Right. I would probably secretly be disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
I would put on a prosaic, this is fine, we got a result that puts us through. It's a second clean sheet in a row. I thought Tyrone Mings played really well.
We don't want to finish first anyway.
No one got injured.
You know, no one got injured, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also think with tournament football, there are two things that are really important. The first is momentum in terms of results. And the second is mentality in terms of seizing game state and pushing forwards with that. And if I am an England player, and I know I'm really doing some mental gymnastics here, not just being Gareth Southgate, but being someone else, I'm looking at those substitutions and I'm seeing a coach who maybe is settling for things when I feel like I want to go on and win the game. If I'm Phil Foden, having been the only England player who really excited people and got people off their seat, I'm looking at you here particularly, Seb, lots of jumping up and down. It's quite distracting. When
there's the man who stands leering at the telly.
Yeah. Sure, sometimes. That I would be really disappointed with that. I would be thinking, not in a kind of egotistical way, this is my moment, I'm going to show everyone how good I am, but you want your coach to have confidence in your ability to change games. And Foden was the only England player who looked like he was going to change the game at that point. Grealish, I don't think, had enough time to do that.
No.
And that would give me some cause for concern about the ultimately pragmatic nature of this coach. And when you then go into a game where you're against a better team than Scotland, no disrespect to Scotland, they played really, really well. And, you know, I arguably gave England a much, much stiffer competition than Croatia did.
Significantly. But
they're not a France or a Germany or a Portugal or the next lot of games mm-hmm. that are going to happen. If England go a goal down in that game, you've got a coach whose natural instinct is always to curl up into a ball, you know, is not to go and push a game and throw on a second striker and try and make something happen.
Which are the animals against which that works, curling up into a ball?
Bear.
Bear?
I think bear.
Isn't that just to protect your...
Certain types of shark.
Your major organs.
Or
shark.
Apparently shark.
How can you roll up into a ball under the sea?
Well, no,
with
a
shark, you try and gouge its eyes or punch it on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rate my chances, but apparently sure. if you're not, you know, you're not sort of a threat to the shark. I'm not about to test this theory. Can I bring something up? Because
stay all day if you want to.
When I go back to the Old Red Lion Theatre Pub in Angel Islington later, I want to be able to say to Uncle Damien that I praise Grant Hanley, because obviously big Norwich fan. I really thought it was great, and it's difficult when you watch football on television. You obviously the cameras follow the ball, so it can be a little bit difficult to see the positioning of a defensive line. But consider this: Hanley outside of him has got Scott McTominay and Kieran Tierney. Neither are orthodox centre halves, and Grant Hanley, for most English watchers of this game, is just a guy from Norwich who is a kind of sort of average-looking centre back, kind of landfill type centre back that you find in the Premier League. I thought it was great. Like the hidden things that you do, which he did tonight, which won't show up in kind of stat lines, which are interceptions, tackles, clearances, those kind of things. But if you're controlling a line of two players out, one player outside on either shoulder of you, that's a terrible sentence. One player on either shoulder, and you're trying to almost coach them through the game because they don't necessarily have centre-back instincts. And then at the end of that 90 minutes, like we look at sort of the way England performed and recognise that at no point was that defensive line in the wrong position. At no point did it get caught too high. When they were defending a lot of the England crosses, firstly, yes, Hanley's got his forehead on everything that came near him. Terrific. But also, there was never a point at which Scotland got caught a little bit too far away from their goalkeeper or a little bit on top of their goalkeeper. And that's organisation. That's something you can't price in a performance. So I thought that was absolutely brilliant. It was, you know, beyond the, like, it's
they
really...
They were pretty great. I think it's a shame in some ways that JJ isn't here to be able to eulogise about them.
I hope it doesn't just become a...
Although he did say in the WhatsApp he only really wanted to be here to talk about how awful England were.
Well, but he can do that when he comes back in, but I...
No.
I hope it doesn't become a, oh, Scotland tried really hard and threw their bodies in the way of shots. It wasn't like that.
Sure.
Scotland defended great. They offered a real threat on the counter-attack. Also, you know, Alex mentioned this earlier, but Dykes and Adams up front, they were a threat. They're not just an outpost chasing balls into the channels and, you know, delaying England attacks. They were dangerous. They could have... Scotland were more dangerous than England.
I think Scotland learned during the course of that game in a way that England didn't. So McTominay tries to bring the ball out in like the third minute, gets dispossessed. That doesn't happen again.
Doesn't happen again.
And maybe that's a Grant Hanley shouting... Hey, invective at
the
him.
John Stones free header that he probably should have scored from doesn't happen again.
It's a lapse,
but they learn from it.
Che Adams and Landon Dykes start the game pressing really quite high up on the England centre-backs, suddenly realise that if they drop off and John McGinn pushes up, all of a sudden they can actually get kind of like a 2v1 or a 3v1 even against Declan Rice, and they start appearing in those gaps an awful lot of the time, particularly Che Adams. To be fair, that's the thing, as I said, Che Adams does that for Southampton. Him and Danny Ings both drop off a lot, partly so they can press from behind the player in possession, because the player in possession is facing away from his goal, so he doesn't feel them coming behind.
But I know what you mean.
It's, you know, they adapted really well during the course of that game in a way that I felt England didn't. Scotland almost had a more mature performance in terms of recognizing situations within the game where they could gain the upper hand and then trying to exploit them.
What's happened here is that you moved it onto Scotland without me, and I plan to go to a break between England and Scotland.
Hey, we can still do that.
Can we?
Well, we've got nice music. We could just stop talking, let people listen to the kind of the slow jazz.
True.
And then go back and maybe people are relaxed to the point where they've forgotten.
Okay. We'll come back and talk about Scotland after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Right, we're back. What a break. That was a great break, wasn't it?
Good.
And now we'll talk about Scotland. They were good and aggressive, weren't they, Seb? And they really offered a threat.
They looked...
I think we've already done a bit of this, but we're just picking
up. I had more because I just want to say I thought they were really well coached. Mm. I thought their systems worked really nicely. I thought the way in which they balanced a little bit of attacking intent at the right moments with retaining their defensive security was absolutely superb.
Because the criticism of Clark after the first game was that he was too conservative,
yeah,
and you could not level that against him in this game, right?
I don't think they were conservative at all. I think they were very balanced. I think they gave a near perfect away performance. I know it doesn't feel like an away performance because when kind of empty, but it was, and they were by no means the favourite. They're an underdog in this game. And yet they all the way through, there was never a point at which it became, you know, there's England friendlies or those qualifiers that England play sometimes where it's literally just they sit in the opposition half and wait to score goals or they get frustrated. It wasn't like that. This was a back and forward game. And now that the kind of the disappointment of it has drained away a little bit, I thought it was a good game. And it won't be for everybody, but people that like British football, who enjoy the rain and the kind of the slight aggro needle and the kind of back and forwards of British football. I thought it was great.
And a knee in the hip within the first 10 seconds.
Knee in the hip and, like, you know, John McGinn trying to get someone sent off. I've forgotten who it was. I think it was Foden when there's a little bit of a scuffle between them.
And the penalty that should have obviously been a penalty.
I don't know. Like, I feel...
Do you remember that one, the penalty that was very obviously a penalty?
So
I've let it go now.
Well,
I'm only bias here.
Earlier in the day, I complained about VAR's intervention in the Croatia-Czech Republic game.
So you're not allowed to say
so
that.
I feel like it's a bit of hypocrisy because I can see it being a penalty. Is it a scandal? No, not really. It's like you have to be a VAR. I'm willing to accept those not being given if it means a no VAR messing about.
Mixed up. And Rob Ferguson say, never a pen. Maybe they're right. I don't know. I'm all caught up in the
one question which keeps coming up though is why no Jadon Sancho? That's an interesting one, Joe.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, or I mean, whoever wants to take that one really, because he you know,
you're jaded.
What does he have to do? What's he got to do to have a kick of the ball? And more importantly, who does he come on for?
I don't know. I like Sancho off the left personally when he plays for Dortmund. But he's also really effective off the right. So I don't think he has to be an either or for any particular player. I think he's just someone that can be used. To me, I think there's still a little bit of that issue in England whereby when a player is really, really excellent in another country, somehow it doesn't seem to matter quite as much as it does if they're really, really good in the Premier League. And I think that's wrong. That being said, I'm not going to pretend to be too angry about it because I don't know. I think there are problems further back. Like we talk about the substitutions. I think the main issue was England just didn't pass the ball well enough. England didn't play with enough pace. England, these are things which, you know, affect the way forwards play and who should start and those kind of things. But
I've noticed we're talking about England again.
We've drifted off back into it. Yeah.
Here's a different question for you, right? Because this group now, Alex, is perilously balanced, let's say. It looks like everyone's doing their best job to finish second. Nobody wants that first spot. We have the Czech Republic and England on 4 points. And we have Croatia and Scotland on 1 point. Now, have I said that correctly? That is correct, isn't it?
That is indeed correct, yes.
And of course, these are the two teams that play each other going into the next round. So the first thing we can say is that we know for sure that if the Czech Republic and England draw in their final game, they are 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. There's no way of surpassing that.
Yep.
Seems a bit odd to be necessary to play those games at the same time, given that we know that. But third place, of course, can go through. If there's a winner out of the Croatia-Scotland game, with 4 points in third place. You think that's a very likely entrance into the final round. Having watched now Croatia twice and Scotland twice, I have to say I think Scotland should be favourites for the game.
I don't think they will be, but I completely take your point. I think Croatia looks.
It's can they score? That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they are. Correct me if I'm wrong. They're yet to score a goal.
They are yet to score a
That's
goal.
That's the thing.
I wonder whether, to me, I mean, Alex, I might ask you this actually. Croatia feel very end of cyclish, very kind of, you know, the best players of this generation are getting old and we're waiting for something new to happen, but it hasn't quite happened yet. Do you get the same impression?
I do. I think, I mean, obviously, this is a team that was a World Cup finalist 3 years ago with many of the same players.
Yep.
Obviously, Rakitic is missing, and I think that's a huge loss in terms of providing the, you know, an additional runner forwards. I think the decision to play Rebic through the centre today was odd and start Perisic on the right-hand side. As soon as Perisic moved to the left,
he just looks after half-time, doesn't he?
He scores a goal almost immediately. So, there are some weird decisions there. Obviously, they have two very young fullbacks and two very old centre-backs. Well, not very old, but... I have to agree in terms of Scotland against Croatia. You know, the idea of Che Adams and Landon Dykes going up against Vida and Lovren, like that's, you're not backing Croatia in that battle. I can see Scotland's physicality and their ability to burst from deep causing the Croatian midfield real tracking problems. They can pin the fullbacks down. And as long as you stop Perisic and whoever plays in the other wide position for Croatia getting the ball, I don't see where they're causing a problem from.
That's the thing. They felt very static against England, more so probably today against the Czech Republic. Like, I wonder whether... I quite fancy that Scotland left-hand side to do some damage. Like, I don't...
Not come good yet.
Not yet.
But
I don't know. Like, I mean, the left-hand side married with that centre-back pairing. Like, Lovren I will never trust. As a centre-back. It's just, there's that thing in him.
Lovren's going to get drawn out towards the ball.
Exactly, he's impulsive.
When somebody is making that run in and you'd have someone like Che Adams or John McGinn lurking, waiting for that mistake, and Robertson or Tierney, if Tierney's pushed up on that left-hand side, they have the cuteness to be able to slide that pass in. I think as long as they convert one of the many chances they're probably going to get, I can see Scotland winning that totally.
I'm fascinated by that, Damek, that Tierney Robertson thing where you have an outside centre back and a left wing back, and they manage to be of kind of not quite equal influence, but both attacking factors in the game. Like, without kind of experiencing that as a professional footballer firsthand, it's really difficult to understand how you can maintain the discipline to keep the integrity of the side throughout 90 minutes. Just really interesting.
Mm. Well, speaking of integrity,
you found that interesting, didn't you?
Very much. Let's talk about the Czech Republic and Croatia. 1-1, of course. Czech Republic with the higher XG in this game. I know you'd want to hear about that, Alex. I have to say, my favourite moment from this game, which incidentally I correctly predicted a 1-1, was my high moment of the day, as it turns out. My favourite moment by far in this game, and probably I will have to say one of my favourite moments in the tournament, along with Goran Pandev's chest wiggle. Well, it was another chest-related incident, and it was Ivan Perisic chesting the ball back to his goalkeeper in a crowded box after a corner, and the goalkeeper catching it, and everyone acting like nothing had happened. And I thought, I've never seen that before, ever. It's like three or four things now I've never seen before in football that I've seen in this tournament, and that one is my favourite one, apart from the chest wiggle.
Can you imagine being good enough at football whereby you feel confident to do that? Because sometimes you see it when is it a ball that's bouncing slowly and a centre-back is sort of moving towards goalkeeper and he gently kind of eases it back. This had to be probably, would you say, like 10 to 15 yards away?
It was far away.
And that's kind of, if you underdo it,
you look incredibly silly. You know?
Yeah, that was just, that was a wonderfully composed bit of football.
I loved it.
You did, didn't you?
Was it after or before his wonderful goal?
Before, surely, wasn't it?
I don't remember, but I do remember you saying that we should make a specific note of this
action. You sent me to my computer to make a note.
You were basically more impressed by this one act than any other piece of football that has happened.
I've never seen it. If you didn't watch this game, if you're listening and you didn't watch this game, it will 100% be in the highlights. Just go and watch the highlights on YouTube or wherever.
It won't be in the highlights.
It will. It definitely will. There's only two goals in this game. It definitely will be in the highlights. No one's ever seen that before.
We'll have someone in the company that can upload it.
He's at like a 45 degree angle to the sky, and he just thrusts his chest, like almost like he disconnects it from his spine and powers the ball back up in an arcing drop.
XD Smithy says wonderful. it was after his goal. Thanks for that. Thank you for the steer there.
There we go. Okay, lots of people in the chat also saying, talk about Billy Gilmore. I'm pretty sure we did. And also, let's wait until JJ gets back and he can do it better than we can.
Yes, he can.
The Czech Republic, Alex, have surprised, I think, it's fair to say, in this group. Or maybe, I suppose, it's that, there's a bit of that. Also, a bit of Croatia have been perhaps more disappointing than we thought. Patrick Schick, he's great. I like him. I want to see him more.
You want to see him more so much that you decided the best thing to do would be to decide which Premier League side he would
play for.
And you said Leeds.
After I got it wrong once or twice, I then said Leeds, and I thought, actually,
I think that makes
nicely.
A lot of sense. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think the Czech Republic were always going to be a side that had a lot of solidity. Mm. Obviously, you've got Suchak. Holler's played today instead of Kroll, which slightly surprised me, but he did very well. Although I would like to point out...
You like Kroll?
I like Kroll a lot, yeah. But the idea of a defensive midfielder wearing the number 9 shirt is genuinely anathema to me. What I thought that the Czechs did really well was there was a really nice balance so that if one of the centre-backs pushed up, then Hollis would drop into the defensive line. They had really good defensive automatisms, which was nice. The fullbacks got high enough to provide a thrust, particularly on the right-hand side with Kufal, who we know from West Ham. There was just a really good balance. Sufal, sorry. And ahead of that, you've got Schick, who is a hard presser, who finishes well, who creates problems, challenging for balls in the air, who's always really impressed me whenever I've seen him. I think the one concern with the Czechs was, would they have, it's supposed to be Darida, who hasn't really done it yet. Would they have somebody who could produce the kind of pass that breaks a compact defense? Mm-hmm. But in the absence of those passes coming, what they've done instead is play a very, very functional, intelligent kind of game.
Yeah.
And controlled as much as they can, possession, pressed really intelligently, stopped up the centre where they've needed to.
And they've scored more goals than every other team in their group combined.
Yeah, because this is the thing. If you have, in tournament football like this, which has such fine margins and so few opportunities in many instances, if you've got a striker who is always looking to spring forwards and also can score more than one type of goal, so Schick is good in the air, but he's also good at running in behind. He's also good at chipping goalkeepers from 40 yards out, which, you know, hey, is a nice thing to also have. So, yeah, it's that they're a good team. Having seen them today against Croatia and watched them properly, and having seen the issues that England have in central midfield, that game is now considerably more concerning if you're an England fan. Mm. And also having seen Scotland and Croatia, that game is considerably less concerning if you're a Scotland fan.
I'm thinking now that Declan Rice and Tomáš Souček together again, it's the game of West Ham's midfield.
Yeah, exactly. And they've both had stellar seasons.
I know which one
for
I
their
prefer.
Club. Which one do you prefer?
I like Tomáš Souček more
than Declan Rice.
I feel I'm not saying he's a better player. They're obviously very, very different types of players. Yeah. But I prefer to watch Tomáš Souček because of the way he just wades through everyone like he's walking waist deep in the sea.
Well, there's very few genuine, like, good physical box-to-box midfielders left in football now because people tend to specialise in one aspect of the game. And Souček is kind of an old-fashioned, will defend a header in his own box and then 5 seconds later he's at the other end of the pitch.
He's Yaya Touré.
Challenging for something. He's got something of that style of midfielder about him. I think he has left less craft and guile than Touré had. Touré is an outstanding player, but I think that ability to impose himself physically on a game, but not just be about his physical attributes, I do understand. And I think Rice feels like one of the players, weirdly, who is more limited by this England team. Because at West Ham, he is a press-resistant, ball-carrying, spraying passes around kind of midfielder. And him and Suchet really complement each other in that way, because one will fill in when the other pushes up. For England, he's all about shielding. And I feel like he does it well, and he's grown into that aspect of his game. We've talked before about what an aware player he is with all of his scanning and stuff. But you don't see that thrust that you get from Declan Rice in a West Ham shirt.
Feels like it's about license, Alex. It's like he is probably, he kind of does 50% of what he does for his club. And so therefore, there's not actually the need for someone with Declan Rice's range of attributes to play that role for England, if that makes sense. Just feels a bit reductive. It just, yeah.
Well, we'll be back after this.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
And we're back. Thank God we're back. Let's talk about Sweden 1, nil Slovakia. XG was weird here. This is the XG podcast, Seb.
Sure is. Sweden 2.32 against Slovakia's 0.69. I really struggle with this game. Like I watched it, I saw all of it, and yet I don't seem to have taken much in. I did quite like what I saw from Alexander Isak, though. Alex, your thoughts on him, please.
That was such a casual throw, Seb, to bail yourself out of having to say any more.
It's late.
Yeah, no, I was impressed. It was professionally
Hey, people
done.
Should read Carl Anka's article about him. That's really
People
good
should read Carl Anka's. In fact, I'm going to be honest. I have Carl Anka's article about him on my phone right here.
Okay.
His combination of explosive speed and inventive finishes meant Isaac's talent was never in question. It's a really nice article, and it basically talks about the kind of player he is. He's really interesting. For a 6'3" striker, he is not a target man. He's not someone you really want to play the ball into in the air.
Not pivot, is he, really?
No, he is really good at running in behind. He worked particularly well in quite a counter-attacking Real Sociedad team. What I loved today was, so there was a moment where Augustinsson was fouled in the left-back slot.
Yes.
Who also played really well, incidentally. I mean, I have a lot of time for Sweden in a very boring way, but let's not get into that, because nobody else will share my enthusiasm. But Isak carries the ball forward. The ball breaks to him. Augustinsson's on the ground complaining. Isak carries the ball up the pitch and turns because he's held up. And naturally there, the out ball is to then play it back to his left back, except his left back is writhing in agony on the floor trying to get a free kick. And so he just turns and goes, sod it, I'm going to do this myself. Carries the ball beautifully, fires off a shot, which arguably he shot low to the goalkeeper's right. Maybe he should have tried to bend it around. I'm not here to criticize technique because I can't kick it myself. But I think the decision at the end of that run was a bit poor. But the pace, the control, the skill, the ability to assess a situation really quickly, think I'm the only guy who can do something here because I've got no support around me, and then execute that. I just thought that was exceptional.
I've got a scenario for you. So I looked it up before, and I think it's true that there is Borussia Dortmund retain a 30 million euro buyback clause in the deal that sent Isak to Real Sociedad. Now, what happens when Erling Haaland eventually leaves? It'll either be this summer or next summer. It feels quite interesting that Isak, I don't think he's not going to inhabit the kind of Haaland era of the game. I don't think he's quite as complete. I think he lacks a few things in his game at the moment. But that that sale also, you know, all of a sudden looks a little bit easier. Got Marco Rosa coming in at Dortmund. Is Isak suit him?
So Marco Rose is a very transition-based coach, like a lot of these modern German coaches are. So that's looking to maximize counter-attacking opportunities and make the most of pressing situations, quick turnovers. And I think in those circumstances, Isak really flourishes. Yeah. When Rosa is at Borussia Mönchengladbach, he's in charge of Plie, he's in charge of Marcus Thuram.
Thuram's a lovely player.
Right, actually. So he's got strikers who are not... I don't think really any of the strikers that played under Rosa at Gladbach are like quintessential old school nines.
Definitely not.
They are players who make interlapping runs, who cross over positions, who drift wide and come central. But everything is about moving the ball with verticality up the pitch and freeing those explosive runners behind. And I think if you add Isak to that setup, you get something that is more subtle and interesting to watch. I mean, Haaland is a phenomenal player, but he is...
He's a violent instrument.
He's a very, very finely tuned blunt instrument.
Yeah.
Whereas Isak has some panache to him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, you know, sort of... Haaland is kind of a gold-plated hammer, isn't he, in a way? Whereas Isak is there is a bit more finesse, there's a bit more technique there. He's a bit more of a subtle player. Like, I really like that Thuram comparison because the Thuram player combination was... I know Gladbach fell off a cliff a little bit when Rosa announced that he was leaving. But when they were at their best, that worked so well. They were so attractive to watch. And you can see an Isak really developing under that style of football. If he could... I'm trying to think of who would be the Thuram and who would be the player. I mean, whether... I don't know. I think he needs another sort of... inside forward slash nine and a half type player to kind of duel with in that situation. But it's interesting. I'd like to see him go back to Dortmund. I think he'd do really well.
I think he would also work at a team like Manchester United who are playing in transition a lot, who are looking to run in behind. And if you have that sort of narrow front three that can also expand out, if you have, say, Greenwood on one side, you have Rashford on the other, and you have Isak through the centre... There's a lot of ball-carrying ability there. There's a lot of players that can shoot from different positions and pose a real threat and get that nice sort of interchange. I think that would, of all Premier League sides...
I would quite like him at Arsenal. I mean, I wouldn't quite like him at Arsenal, but I could see that working because there'll be no Lacazette. I could see him working with Aubameyang. Like, I'd see that, like, Aubameyang from the left, Isak as your kind of nine... That would be quite a nice dynamic. I think Arsenal have other priorities. They certainly need to build their defence a little bit better, and I think that's what they'll probably do. They'll also have to replace Granit Xhaka if he leaves. So, but I think it's quite telling that you could probably put him into quite a few situations and imagine him succeeding. That's quite descriptive of how good he is, I think.
Yeah, he's a lovely player to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, before we finish today, let's just quickly go through the points that we have so far. Alex, pleased to say that you're still in the lead with 33. You did well today. I can't remember the details of that, but just to say, you did well.
I'm Take gratified.
It. That's a nice, yeah.
So pleased.
Next up is JJ, who is on 38. I'm starting to worry that I've added these up wrong, but listen, this is what it is now. This is how it works. JJ, five points behind Alex now in second on 38. Seb just behind on 39.
Okay. Made That's not bad. Today. Not bad, not bad. I had a good day.
I made up 1 point on you today. Okay. To be, or maybe he added a point. Yep, I added a point to be 44.
You got a perfect score though today.
I got a perfect score, but then I added 4 points when I said that England would win 3-1.
A bit wild in the old England-Scotland, yeah.
And before we finish, tomorrow's games. Let me just find out what they are. Ooh, looking forward to tomorrow. It's a big day. Mm. Saturday. Spain-Poland, Hungary-France, Portugal-Germany, hot diggity dog. Seb, let's begin with you.
Read that again, Joe. I stopped listening again.
No, very reasonable. Very. I almost stopped talking. Spain, Poland, please.
Spain win that one. 2-0.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Hungary, France.
France, 3-0.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And Portugal, Germany.
1-1.
Okay. 1-1. Alex, I'm coming to you.
Spain, 3-1.
He's taking it so seriously.
He sniffed victory. yeah. senses victory.
Do you remember how uncool he thought it was a few days ago when he wasn't winning? And now he's winning. He's like, maybe it's okay.
It's like him with fancy football.
If you're going to do
something. I don't like games.
You know, like, oh, I'm so above fancy football. Yeah. I'm not bothered I finished last.
Just because he lost by 200 points. Okay, what did you say Spain were going to win there, darling?
3-1.
3-1, sure. Okay. Hungary, France, please.
2-0 to France.
Mm-hmm. Portugal, Germany.
2-1 to Germany.
Oh, hello now. Okay. I think Spain, Poland is a classic 1-0 Poland.
Nice. Okay.
I think Hungary, France is a classic 2-0 France. And I think Portugal, Germany is a classic 3-all. And I'm really going out on that one because if that's not anything like that, I'm going to add possibly up to 7 points.
What's getting a 3-all?
Portugal, Germany is getting 3 goals each. That's the big 3-3. The big 3-3. It's always a 3-3 in a tournament. There's always a 3-3. Anyway, you wouldn't have predicted 5-5 Sir Alex Ferguson's last game,
I would
just
not.
Just 3-3 is nothing like a 5-5. Anyway, it's all time for bed, isn't it? It's all time for bed. And I will say to you for listening, thank you for joining us in the film noir music this evening. I hope you enjoyed the day's games and hope to see you again tomorrow. Seb Stafford-Bloor.
Thank you very much.
I say I hope to see you again tomorrow because I have a feeling you might fall into a ravine on the way home.
No, I shall be here. I shall be fine. Bit of sleep. All good. Back to normal. Well, not normal, but, you know, in that direction.
Yeah. Okay. Alex Stewart, will you be normal tomorrow?
Is it for me to answer that question? I mean, I will be here.
You'll be the same. You'll be you. You'll just be you.
I'll just be
you.
Me.
Anyway, thanks to our lovely crew of Craig and Sol, as usual, and our supporter in the room this evening, illustrator Henry Cook. You can't see him, but he is here, and he's been a very, very quiet boy. Well done.
At Telstar Designs.
Yeah, do give him a follow. That's why there's no horrible abuse in the chat, because he hasn't been able to use his burner at home. So, we will be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening, and au revoir. Good night. Bye.